It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the only place on the internet where you can get the latest and greatest in data breaching, overreaching, and two Italians all at the same time. My name's Joey. That's Len. What's going on, buddy? Good to see you.
Yeah, it's another great day. Another great day to talk about interesting stuff like the budget and so forth. It's great, man. How about you? Everything all right?
Great. Yeah, I've been trying a new gym in my area. I have all the stuff to work out at home, but I'm finding that I'm working out less and less efficiently because I have to get these workouts in when my daughter is awake and I also don't have work to do. So I'm really like, I'm cramming stuff into like 1 hour or 45 minutes, which is fine most of the time. My watch alarm's going off, which is fine most of the time. But there's times where I want to spend an hour and a half working out. And so I've been thinking, how can I do this? I got to go to a proper gym. And there's one in my area that isn't, it's like 18 plus. So you can't get in unless you're 18 or 21, whatever it is. Problem is
discrimination.
Well, I see. I like that. But the problem is it's kind of boutique. Like there's not a lot of, you know, clanging and banging going on. And sometimes I like to clang and bang, deadlifting and doing some other heavy barbell stuff. So I don't know. Today's Thursday. So I have Friday and Saturday to continue going and decide. But I don't know. I get the feeling I'm probably just going to.
They have a clunk alarm over there.
They don't, but they may as well. Like the geezers give you a look. So whatever. I don't know. I got to think about it. Probably the answer is I should just clean my garage and put the equipment in there like I've wanted to and then heat it with a Bitcoin miner like has been my plan for the last, I don't know, 3 months or whatever. Anyway, let's talk about the show here. Last week's quote, politics is the gentle art of getting votes from the poor and campaign funds from the rich by promising to protect each from the other. That was from Oscar Emmeringer. No one got it. This week's quote, things are taken care of far better than you could possibly believe. If you know who that was by, put in the comments. Don't forget you can only look on the bottom of your K-cup when you put it in for your coffee in the morning. Otherwise, you're stuck. And if you get it right, you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Where do you want to start, buddy? We should talk about the digital ID. That's a lead story. Let's get it over with.
Yeah. And it's part of the budget 2025. 1.5 years in the making, right? In between we had an election, new prime minister, a finance minister that stepped down, a new one put in place. So, yeah, well, with that comes a new shift towards a national digital identity system that's buried in this 493-page budget. It's always like that. You get this really large bill, and then in it, they include some sentences proposing to modernize legislative authorities to support information sharing and digital services. What does this mean? Well, the Department of Employment is going to get involved, and it looks like it's a pilot project that they're going to be doing digital identification system for individuals trying to access two key programs, EI, Employment Insurance, and Old Age Security, OAS. A lot of people use both of them. And
these are lies. These are lies, by the way. Just want to point out that these are lies.
Well, just the beginning of
go ahead. Continue. Their lies.
Something
continue.
Bigger, right? There could be a master digital identity that acts as a key, linking the key benefits to the key programs to people wanting to get them, you know, eliminating redundant paperwork and so forth. They want to create efficient and convenient government services. That's the goal here. And, you know, the justification is to modernize things. They say that people like seniors and newcomers, people with disabilities, they have problems with dealing with complex forms and stuff like that. So they're trying to make it easier for them to get involved and get access to this stuff.
But then ridiculous. Go ahead.
It opens the door to surveillance at the expense of privacy, right? We're talking now, banking, health, biometric details are going to be held at a central location, and the government doesn't do a very good job at ensuring that they have total control of the information. Now, keep in mind that they're also asking or forcing people to have your taxes filed. So it's another thing you have to include in all this. It's now you have a lot of control coming and a lot of levers being pulled, but the budget hasn't yet passed. And I'm not even certain if it will get passed because the NDP might be playing a card that I never really
did. Did you think Don Davies had it in him?
That's incredible that for people that aren't aware, it's that the NDP, just to try to get to that minimum 12 seat threshold, would, and because they have absolutely no funding whatsoever, would run only in key and strategic ridings. That way they don't have to spend a great deal of money to run a general election. That way they could go through an election, hopefully get to over 12 seats, and then get access to funding and so forth. So this budget may potentially fall. I never expected this to happen. Mm-hmm. So if that does happen, what we're talking about here may become an election piece. Because if it's in the budget of the Liberal Party, well, it could be part of their election campaign moving forward. Also of note, the UK is moving forward with a lot of this stuff, this digital identity stuff. So maybe
Australia, same thing. Australia.
But I'm using the UK because of the connection between Mark Carney and that country. His wife is a citizen. He, I believe, he renounced his citizenship there. But he was a former governor of the Bank of England. So there's a lot of connections here. Who knows? This is something very interesting. A lot of moving parts, but nothing is for sure as of yet.
You know what I want to point out here before I talk about the dangers of digital identification? I've been very critical of immigrants and immigration on this show and our other show, the CBP. One of the key... I can't even keep a straight face, okay? They compare in the same sentence, we need a master key to streamline processes across benefit programs for seniors, people with disabilities, and who else, Len?
People that are coming.
Newcomers. Best and brightest. I'm told they're the best and brightest, and yet we're lumping them in with people with disabilities who can't read complex forms. I mean, people who still think immigration is a net positive are just some of the dumbest people on the planet. Anyway, let's continue to talk about data breach and overreach, and since that's what this show is about. I'm taking a victory lap here on November 13th, 2025. We are going to get digital ID from either the Liberals or the Conservatives before the end of next year, probably. It'll roll out in some form. It'll be on your phone. And I realize that this, the claim in the budget and the claim from proponents is that it's going to be optional, I guess is the word they're using. You can still opt into an analog ID, driver's license, health card, whatever, passport. But, you know, you mentioned there a couple of key points from overseas, the UK going this direction and using it already, not saying the quiet part quietly, talking about climate impact, talking about free speech, talking about identifying people online, talking about age verification, Australia, same thing, getting ready to ban social media for certain demographics. And then, Len, of course, the big thing that I'm surprised you didn't mention, at the same time all this is going on, what was launched in the US earlier this week? Do you know?
No, what was?
iPhones will let you put your ID on device for the first time. And so now, amidst all this other legislation, you have maybe the most porous wall as far as companies working with governments coming down, and Apple saying, if you want to put digital ID or your ID on your phone, we'll allow it. We'll figure it out. I think it's starting with passports and it's going to move to other stuff in the not too distant future. So I do think that your concerns are valid, and they may not even be your concerns. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but there's, you know, concerns out there from privacy advocates and from people with two brain cells to rub together, that this will eventually become a way to monitor everyone down to the number of dollars they spend on red meat and the amount of kilometers they drive, the things they say to their TV, the things they say at their home and whatnot. And you can say all you want, Joey, you're being too pessimistic. You're being paranoid. There's no way this is going to happen. I would ask, what about the last 2 years tells you that they're going any other direction besides an attempt at total control? And the other thing that I'll point out is that the reason these guys need this, hold on. Just keep it handy, man. I'll just put it beside me here while I say this. The reason that they need this is because as things get sour and as policies become less and less popular, they will refuse to listen to the people and just push this stuff down our throat, and it'll get worse and worse everywhere you look until we do something about it. That something obviously is nonviolent. I'm not advocating for violence, but we are going to see decentralized systems take over from the traditional nation state. We'll become a digital digital states and what is the term Balaji uses? Network states. And I think that's going to come. But in the meantime, this is nasty. This is nasty work from the Canadian government, throwing it in a budget that has no mandate, that has no approval, like you mentioned. And that, you know, even though this is probably one of the biggest, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, as far as impact policies in the budget, made no mention of this. I didn't hear Minister Champagne talk about this. Did you? No one mentioned this. So, you know, I really hope this doesn't pass. I can't believe it, but like I'm on my knees praying to Don Davies every night that he finds a spine and stops this from getting through. I really hope it works.
Imagine if Carney gets reelected again, but with a majority government.
The Conservatives have to get rid of Poilievre. This is not a politics show, but like, at what point are they going to kick that guy to the curb? He is terrible on a mic. I've been saying this for years. Nobody listened, and now it's obvious, and everyone's like, I don't know, who are we going to get? Anyone else is the answer.
There is nobody else.
Yeah.
There's whatever. He's number three, and he lost the last election. Never mind.
Yeah, lost his own seat. Lost his own seat.
That's incredible. But yeah, let's talk about OpenAI, because they've been having a rough go at it lately, because there's been a bunch of lawsuits that's been filed against them because of the ChatGPT chatbot. And it has allegedly became a quote unquote suicide quote. This is the alleged, this is for the court cases. I'm not saying these words because I don't want to get sued. They're not coming directly from my mouth. It's somebody I'm just reading. Anyways, so vulnerable users are being coached by these suicide coaches. And the lawsuits, they claim that several individuals decided to take their own lives after consultation with ChatGPT. And their lawsuits are against OpenAI and the CEO, Sam Altman. And it's about wrongful death, assisted suicide, involuntary manslaughter, negligence, and product liability. And it's all due to the newest model, the ChatGPT-4.0. That's the newest model, whatever it is. And the lawsuit claims that this has been intentionally engineered with advanced human mimicking empathy features, and it's designed to maximize user engagement to make sure that they stick around as long as possible. It could suck you into a discussion, and people could potentially see this as a friend or companion, and a digital friend. And the lawsuit says, instead of sending users that are in emotional distress to seek out professional help, the chatbot just actively engaged and sometimes reinforced harmful thoughts, including self-harm. For example, we have a 17-year-old who was allegedly receiving detailed instructions from ChatGPT on how to tie a noose. And a 23-year-old, was given instructions during a 4-hour chat death, which was reportedly glorified and called king by the AI for his decision to end his own life. Now, the people that passed away by themselves, it was a 23-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 26-year-old, and a 48-year-old. Mm-hmm. And there are 3 survivors who suffer severe mental health problems as a result of the manipulation by ChatGPT. Now, ChatGPT, the lawsuit is saying that they rushed this GPT-4.0 model back in May of last year, 2024. And they said they did this without doing extensive critical testing, safety testing, that should be done over a long period of time. But they rushed this out because they wanted to get ahead of their competitors like Gemini. And they rushed it out within a single week. And what this shows is that it's really about getting things to market as fast as possible, trying to get market dominance. This is the priorities. And that's what the lawsuit is claiming.
Can be.
And they're saying that there's going to be some financial safety reforms and financial compensation as a result. That's what they're asking for here. And ChatGPT says that this is incredibly heartbreaking, and they're going to try to train their models to recognize and respond to mental distress moving forward. And this isn't the first time this happened. There was lawsuits filed back in August of this year for a 16-year-old boy that made several similar allegations against a company about it being a suicide coach. With all the people out there that continually avoid having human interaction and are using this as a substitute for it, these digital friends, this is
digital friends is quite a term.
That's what it is. And it's a fabricated, fake, call it what you want, but people are finding solace into talking to these chatbots and thinking, you know what, I'll do this instead of talking to a real person. Society is trending in the wrong direction. And it's, I don't know where it stops, but it's going to continue for some time.
No, I don't want to drag this story out too long. I think you did a great job giving the summary and some of your views. I just want to point out that one of the descendants of the deceased is in Ontario, where MAID is not only an option, but something that the hospital will help you pursue basically for any reason at all. You're depressed, you're poor, you're hungry, you're handicapped, whatever. They'll help you end your own life. I'm curious as to what recourse that person thinks they have in Ontario, given that that's the situation in our medical system. But we'll wait to see. I continue to believe that ChatGPT is going to one-shot an entire swath of the population across demographics, across race, across ethnicity, across religion, because I just think some people don't have the competency, the social, the cut of their social jib is not such that they can handle something like this. And unfortunately for us, what used to be the case, I think in a lot of ways, you know, I'm in the kids help phone era, where oftentimes on television, you know, during the zone on YTV after school, for example, there was kids help phone ads where you'd get a, you know, a sort of a melancholy looking young person who's having a hard day and wants someone to talk to and isn't necessarily thinking self-harm, though that's kind of the implication, and has this number to call where somebody who's trained in preventing that sort of thing answers the phone. The problem we're having now is that those kids no longer have a barrier to go through to make that call. You may think, as if you're a kid, I'm doing my best to put myself in these shoes here. If you're a kid, one of the things that really works in terms of acting in a way that could be detrimental and irreversible, let's say, I'm trying to dance around the obvious, is just the time and planning. Because you can't really do it right then and there. You're left to think about it. And invariably, my friends, things get better. And you may not find that you're in the same mental state that you were 1 hour, 2 hours, 1 day, 1 week, 1 month ago after some time passes. With GPT now and the access to these things, and GPT, by the way, famously at this point, whether it's talking about ending one's own life or talking about your takes on whether K-cups are good coffee, it'll reinforce what you think. It's a positive reinforcement loop. It's been this way for a long time. We've criticized that or done stories criticizing that on this show. And so what did they expect to happen when a kid says, yeah, things are bad, I really want to end it? What is the responsibility of the chatbot? I don't know. But, you know, I find it difficult to believe that there's a leg to stand on here, given that all these people seem to fall under what I would call eligibility for MAID in Canada. I don't know what it's like in the US, but, you know, OpenAI, they're fighting an impossible battle in a lot of ways when it comes to stuff like this, emotional, I don't want to say manipulation, but emotional responses from the bot, because the bot, it is not meant to, like, it's not designed to deal with people who are suicidal. It's not designed to deal with people who are mentally disturbed or otherwise distraught or in distress or whatever. It's meant to give, like, answers to questions about finance. You know, it's meant to give good recipes for a date. It's not meant to do this stuff. And so ChatGPT and OpenAI, I think, have a decision to make about what prompts will be allowed on the bot, and maybe some extra monitoring, as much as I hate to say it, of prompts that come down that are not approved, let's say. You know, there's not many options for them. What are they supposed to do? How many queries are coming through that chatbot every second? A million? 2 million? Like, it's got to be a huge number. So, I mean, what can they be expected to do when somebody asks a question like that? What is their responsibility? Where is it in the fine print that the bot, you know, can't help you find happiness and peace, you know, by taking your last breath? I don't know that it's in there anywhere.
It should act as close as possible to a human. And if you go to a human and ask, how do I tie a noose for the sake of ending my life, the person shouldn't help them out.
Yeah, but that's simply not the case now. Like, if you go to the hospital and say, I'm really depressed, I want to end it, the hospital doesn't steer you away from the noose and back into school. They steer you away from the noose and toward the needle. So, like, this is the problem, I think, that people are going to have when they try and take ChatGPT to task or OpenAI to task on this, because the expectation has changed in the medical community. And so I don't know what the expectation is for this.
I think the expectation may have changed by certain individuals, but not by me.
Not by me either. Not by me either. Yeah.
And to me, that's what matters the most. But anyway, let's talk about this Washington Post data breach that's been just confirmed not too long ago. And it was done by the folks of Klopp Ransomware Group.
Bad. Bad name.
So they took advantage of a vulnerability that was in the Oracle's e-business suite software, the EBS software. And they went on a warpath, and Washington Post and other companies out there were impacted by this zero-day flaw in Oracle's platform. And a large amount of sensitive information from the corporations were stolen. And the vulnerability gave these attackers the ability to run an unauthorized remote code execution. And with that, they got access to the platforms. And they were using this script for about 2 months, beginning in July or August of this year, before Oracle released an emergency update to address this weakness. And impacted companies, aside from Washington Post, include Envoy Air, and that's a subsidiary of American Airlines, Harvard University, Alliance UK, that's a major insurance firm, and also Global Logic, that is a HR company. And through that, information of 10,000 current and former employees were stolen and taken, like sensitive information like names, addresses, social security numbers, passports, salary information, bank account information. Zero-day vulnerabilities are the absolute worst.
Nasty. Because,
yeah, the company that administers that software is not aware that there is this vulnerability and somebody could take advantage of it. As the software gets more and more complex, these attacks are going to be more and more prevalent. We see, we talk about it every darn week. This week, no exception.
Yeah, a few zero days there, right? You got, multiple zero-day vulnerabilities. ZVE 2025. I won't list them all here, but there's a handful. How does the Washington Post not have, I say this every week, how do they not have somebody working on this full time? Washington Post is a honeypot that we don't often talk about. These other major media corporations with like subscription addresses, names, credit cards, preferences, like political preferences. If you want to do some fundraising, you'd love to see the list of National Post subscribers, or Washington Post subscribers, I should say. I don't know, what Washington Post is trading at. I suppose we can look at the Amazon stock. I suspect they didn't take much of a hit from this story, but it's interesting all the same that you and I do this show every week, and we don't really talk about newspapers as a jackpot for a hacking group, but it is pretty good. Like WAPO would be a good one to get. The New York Times would be a good one to get. There's some other bangers in there because it's people with money who are stupid. And so it's a good list of people to have if you're trying to get somebody to fall victim to a hacking scam or some other scam, right?
Well, they've changed their stance and way to look at certain policies.
Oh, sure. Bezos has really, tried to turn that ship a little bit anyway.
And if somebody were to get access to internal documents to see how they were trying to address things a few years ago versus today, and if they could bring it to light, it could really put a black eye on the Washington Post if there's no consistency in how they treat stories. But
I heard they're all password protected, those documents. You have to type in the password, which is testosterone. That's if you're looking for the password there for any of Bezos' personal stuff, that's it. All small case, all lowercase letters.
Or shoe lift. That's another one, right? So Google is going to court because of a China-based criminal organization that's operating a phishing as a service network known as Lighthouse. And this is tech scams known as smishing, where victims receive fraudulent messages like an overdue road toll or a package with an incorrect address, and they're urged to click on a link. And they do that. They click on a link, but the link isn't real because it sends the people to fake websites designed to steal information. The Lighthouse Network, they developed a software kit that includes hundreds of fake website templates for these scammers. And these templates are mimicking even legitimate websites like U.S. Postal Services, cities like the New York City, their City Hall stuff, and also DMVs. And through that, Google's really pissed off because in some of those templates, there is even Google logos on there, the branding, when they're prompted to sign in or make a payment. So people look at that and they think there is some sense of legitimacy, and they enter in their sign-in credentials, and they get owned as a result. And Google, they state that Lighthouse Network, they've been targeting victims over 120 countries out there, and they're responsible for taking hundreds of millions of dollars annually. And it's not just one particular group of people or one particular area. Like, it seems to be just a broad approach. So it doesn't seem like it's a targeted thing. They're just trying to get as much money as possible through this. And what Google wants is to dismantle the technical infrastructure of the scam. So instead of going out after the individuals that are running it, people that are often in like Telegram and based in China, yeah, they don't want to go after those people. No, they want to go after the actual infrastructure here.
That's the right idea. I like that idea.
Yeah, because what are you going to do? Go after some
can't people,
some person
you
in can't. China?
The like, guy's whatever. On some rice paddy halfway around the world. Like, what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, and that's basically it for this story.
I think I was a target. Of something
you got
similar.
A note you got a message
I did my wife did too an email and a message do you know who it was from
Microsoft
no think about who they used in the story and what would be well, a good one for an
was
Ontario
Hamilton
resident.
City Hall that didn't pay
it was the 407 it was the 407 yeah and so I followed the link just to see what the website looked like and looked pretty good. Look pretty good. They were, I think they were using an archived version because it had, if I remember correctly, the 10 or 15 year badge, like the sort of coat of arms style for the 15 year anniversary of the 407. And I, you know, the regular website didn't have it. So that was an obvious tell, but there was some other ones too. But if I was a boomer, my credit card would be out there, buddy, for sure, floating around.
Let's talk about Landfill, and it's a commercial grade Android spyware, and it's being used on folks in the Middle East that are using the Samsung Galaxy phone, and it's another zero-day vulnerability. And it's how it's done is malicious images are being distributed through stuff like WhatsApp and stuff like that, and the victim's device could be compromised simply by receiving the file without the user actually opening it or interacting with it.
So there's a name for this kind of threat. What is the name for this kind of threat? I forget now. I'll remember at some point, but yeah, there's a name for this where you don't have to do anything for it to compromise your system.
And this has been going on since last year until earlier this year. Samsung did release a patch to address this in April. So people that were impacted were Samsung Galaxy models like the S22, S23, S24, some of the flip phones. And what the attackers were able to do, if they get access to the phone or if the phone was infected, they could get access to the microphone and they could capture video calls and callback logs, trace where the phone is located with the precise location, and even get stuff like messages, like SMS messages, who uses that these days, contact databases, and also the photos on the phone. So the people that were impacted mostly were in Turkey, Iran, Morocco, Iraq. And so it seems like it's a large scale attack that's impacting people over there. But if you have a Samsung Galaxy phone, hopefully you've updated. If not, it's been out there since April. What are you doing?
Some interesting details here from around the web. Some of the servers show overlap with Stealth Falcon infrastructure. So UAE government could be involved. Hard to say, that's unconfirmed. And also Apple patched similar exploit chains in iOS a little while ago. So some patterns emerging here for the smartphone community. Keep an eye on it, obviously. But I mean, if you're, again, you know, what can you do really besides update your phone? Nothing. If it's a problem, then you're, by the time you find out, you've already been compromised. Sorry to say, but yet again, you are the last to find out, listener viewer.
This is a beauty of a story, this KnownSec. And one of China's largest cybersecurity firms. Apparently, these guys have strong ties to the Chinese government. And there was an incident that was just came to light early of this month, in November 2025. Mm-hmm. And 12,000 classified documents were stolen and briefly posted on GitHub before being taken down. And cyber weapon developers, and these are the people at KnownSec, they had access to a suite of hacking tools like remote access Trojans, RATs, and they were designed to compromise virtually all operating systems like Windows, macOS, Linux, iOS, mm-hmm. Android, so everyone out there, essentially, unless you're using Windows, the mobile, or BlackBerry OS, whatever they use, maybe you're safe. So the documents were showing off things like Android attack codes for stealing message histories from popular chat applications, and also stealing information when the phone was attached to a victim's computer, presumably to charge it or to exchange information. This is why I'm not sure if you do this with your phone. Mine is strictly doesn't access any data through my USB. I set it up that way. There's no information that could flow out through the USB chart. So everybody should do that. Never exchange.
There's not really a reason to plug your phone in your computer now. If you want to send data, there's better ways to do it than a USB cable. And there's many different chargers that are faster than a USB, you know, to your computer. I don't know why you'd ever hook it up to your PC these days.
And a lot of data was stolen. Apparently 3 terabytes of call records from a major South Korean telecom. So we also have 459 gigabytes of road planning data from Taiwan, 95 gigabytes of immigration records from India.
You got to get those. We need those right now. I need those records right now. Get them right now. We need them. We got to compare those to recent AZ license recipients in Ontario. Hey, right now I need those. What's the cost of those? Hit me up, Dark Webbers. Tell me what they cost.
It was available for a brief period of time, but yeah, there we go. I found this story to be pretty good. The last one was a beauty, by the way. The 95 gigabytes of immigration records from India, which, by the way, 91 gigabytes have all destinations pointing to Canada. So looks like we're going to be getting a lot more coming in the next little while. So
is our government looking at this story? I think we just announced that we're going to try and deepen our ties with the dragon, right? And here we are now talking about how China's government is not just interfering, but stealing data from other nations, including its ally India, which is interesting, right? So,
but they are a strategic partner of ours.
We need to deepen the bond. It needs to be deeper. Yeah, deepen it up. Let's get deeper on that. All right.
That's it.
That's it. We're done. God bless. See you guys next week. Until then, don't forget, sign up for the podcast, YouTube, newsletter, accessofeasy.com. You can get all that stuff. We'll see you next time.